Okay, here we are. Henry, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, it's good to be back, Jeff. Fine.
Thank you.
A lot of activity again.
It's crazy. There's one thing I've just got to pull up here. A Washington Post story. Donald Trump made over 18,000 false or misleading claims in 1,100 days in office. 18,000. Let's call them what they are. Lies. 18,000 lies. False or misleading claims in 1,170 days in office. Now that sort of sums up what we've been watching here. And to quantify it like that is interesting. But, you know, this whole thing is just, it's truly tragic what's happened here. And I don't see any possible way to rectify rehabilitate the damage done here. It's going to take a long, long time. And when it's reconstructed, reconfigured, it won't be the same. This is just a political issue. In case any of you are new to the program tonight, and I think many are, Dr. Henry Nyman has been here every night. We've been together doing this third hour on the virus. First program was January the 8th, and then regularly, very shortly thereafter, we've been following it, tracing it, bringing you the latest statistics, the inside information, and all the important material that you won't find anywhere else. And I know a lot of people listen to this program and listen to Henry because things we talk about often appear tomorrow in some of the other mainstream sites. It's kind of interesting to see. Henry, go to it.
Well, today's story was pretty much the testimony before the Senate committee, and Anthony Fauci took the lead. He didn't have Trump standing over his shoulder, and even though they were all remote because they were under quarantine. Because they had. Yeah. Trump over their shoulder, and so going to the White House was kind of potentially anyway hazardous to Fauci's health, and so he's got a limited quarantine because he was exposed to Pence's press secretary Katie
Miller.
Miller, right. And she ended up testing positive on Friday. She had actually been coughing on Thursday and tested negative, which raises some questions about the quickie test that they are using at the White House. It's known to have about a 15% false positive rate. Yeah. Right. And apparently that did happen on Thursday because she was coughing. She didn't have a mask, and she was kind of joking and saying that she didn't have COVID. And it turns out at the time she probably didn't realize she did have COVID. And unfortunately, that's one of the problems with the virus, that you could be shedding the virus and spreading it when you are asymptomatic or when you have mild symptoms. And many people, you know, when they just have a little bit of a cough, they figure, you know, they got a little bit of a cough and don't really associate it with actually having COVID until they get more serious symptoms or get tested and are positive. And of course, if they're tested and they're negative, then even though they've got a cough, they assume that it's a cough due to something other than COVID because they were just tested a day or two earlier and they were negative. And so, and that kind of threw Trump for a loop too. He said, she's testing out fine all along. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, he can't really figure out why.
Something happened, right.
Yeah. Something happened and she was positive. He doesn't really understand how that could happen, actually. I think he actually said that he didn't understand how it could happen. But that raises some serious questions. doesn't seem to, or at least claims to not understand how the test works. And also is under the illusion that kind of akin to the virus disappearing and miraculously disappearing in April, now his latest line is that it'll just go away and you don't even need a vaccine. It's just going to disappear on its own.
Did he actually mention the term vaccine in there in that pronouncement? Or did he just say it?
Yes. He said that the virus can go away without a vaccine. Specifically, that was his statement. He said that a couple of days ago. And
interesting. Kind of like SARS did.
Right.
Maybe that's
right.
What he was thinking.
Except, well, he was thinking the same thing in April. He was using SARS as the example. Mm-hmm. The problem is that SARS only affected 7,000 people and killed 770 or so. And, you know, that's that's what happens in the U.S. in, you know, half a day. You get those types of numbers. I mean, the U.S. is down a little bit, but, you know, it's been going along at about 2,000 a day. Maybe it's down to 1,500 the last few days anyway. And that's still double what the total that died in the entire SARS outbreak. So this virus, even though it's the same class as SARS, it's really a, you know, SARS-CoV-2 is designated. It really is much more infectious than the SARS was. And, it's approaching, I think it's up to 4 million people worldwide now. So 4 million is really not the same as 7,000.
Really? You're kidding.
Yeah, there's a difference, right? Right. So even though 7,000 can disappear, and in reality, the 7,000 were, you know, localized mostly in mainland China, and the one incident in the Metropole Hotel led to the international expansion, and it really only got established in Toronto. It's the only major outbreak in North America. It didn't make it into South America. It didn't make it into Africa. It didn't make it a little bit into Europe, but minimal in Europe. It was mostly in Asia, and the countries that were hit the hardest were all very close to China. It was Singapore and Vietnam and Taiwan. Mm-hmm. were the main countries. And so it was more of a localized. It wasn't a pandemic. It was really more of an epidemic. This outbreak is definitely a pandemic. And, it's approaching or might even past 200 countries. It's on every continent except for Iceland, except for Antarctica. And it's not going to disappear. And the evidence for that is really all over the place. Number one, it's no longer April. It is May. And the U.S. has had
it's
over
almost
80,
the middle of May.
About,
do you realize?
About
you know
83,000. Right, right. Yeah, it's almost halfway through May. And there's over 83,000 deaths in the U.S. alone. Russia's now having 10,000 cases a day.
Oh, they're
so
getting
They're getting ready to move into number two. They're going to end up passing United Kingdom, Italy, and Spain. And those are the only three countries in front of them other than the United States. And so they'll move into number two.
They'll never catch Donald. Come on.
No. I didn't say they're going to make it to number one. They're way behind the U.S., but they're just a few thousand cases away from number
sure.
two. They're all kind of bunched up
That's
there right now.
Yeah.
Those four countries are.
Putin's press secretary is now infected and in the hospital,
right.
As is his, what the heck's it? Premier? Anyway, what the other guy that used to be Medvedev, but now it's got a new one. Not the vice president.
Yeah, what well,
anyway, whatever.
Well, it is kind of dangerous in politics, especially because, you know, if you kind of don't pay attention to the virus very much and have a lot of meetings and don't wear masks and don't just kind of ignore the virus isn't going to ignore you. And all of a sudden, your inner circle is infected. And that seems to be the case in the White House also. It's not really clear. Now they're talking about Pence and Trump kind of staying away from each other. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Pence, that was latest today, that they're kind of, you know, not get too close to each other. So I wouldn't be surprised if Pence is infected. I mean, it was his press secretary that was positive. And,
he couldn't be closer. He's probably closer to the press secretary than he is his wife.
Well, they were traveling. They both went to the same rehabilitation center in Alexandria on Thursday, and Thursday is when she was she's in pictures showing that she's not wearing a mask. Everybody else is, and she's holding a little gaggle with the press, and one of the reporters that was actually right in front of her said she was coughing and joking that don't worry, it's not COVID.
Famous last words.
Is what she was saying. Yep. And that was Thursday morning. So that's why I say, I'm not sure
Friday,
when
Saturday,
she got
Sunday,
tested.
Monday, Tuesday. On, 5 days. Yep. If Donald so much as coughs, tongues will wag.
Right. But I think the Pence is coughing, and that's why he's not really making a whole lot of public appearances.
Not visible.
Originally he was going to work from home. Then they said he was going to come to the White House. But even though he theoretically, I guess he was seen there. I guess even though he did come to the White House, and even though there was a meeting of the committee he chaired, he was in charge of the task force. He wasn't on the schedule, so it wasn't that, you know, he got caught in traffic or, you know, had a conflict, or he was not scheduled to be at that meeting, and he wasn't. And you know, Trump, you know, even if they're not up on stage and don't say anything, you know, Trump typically brings his whole entourage along with him to kind of fill out the seats and cheer him on if necessary. And Pence wasn't there. So I'm a little suspect. I mean, Jared was there wearing a mask. Stephen Miller wasn't there, and he is in quarantine. He's probably infected also, but
so Jerry
had
a mask the whole time. Okay, Jerry
was
knows
on camera. He was on camera. He had a mask at the White House briefing.
So
you know that
he knows. He knows something.
There were cameras there, and he had a mask. You know, that's not a common occurrence.
No.
Usually, if there's cameras around, they won't.
Somebody's infected.
Mask, and
he knows. He doesn't want to get sick. That's what I said.
And so, in any event, the discussion today was done remotely. Most of the participants were doing it. You know, they were not in the chambers at the Senate. They were basically at home and had video cameras and microphones and were asking their questions. And the one warning that kind of stood out that Fauci gave was he was worried about opening things up too quickly and causing needless suffering and death. was kind of the teaser that was out there before it even started. He had sent an email to the New York Times and said that, you know, that was one of his concerns, is that things were going to open up too quickly. And there's good reason for him to be concerned about that. That, like I said, the number of cases is still in the 20 to 25,000 a day range. Most of the overall decline really is due to New York and New Jersey declining, which are number one and number two. So they are definitely over the hump and do have lower numbers on a daily basis. So now they're kind of down at a level that's similar to the other states that typically give high results, like Pennsylvania or Illinois or Michigan. And so the total is down a little bit, in part because of New York and New Jersey. But if you strip those two out, the numbers for the rest of the country is actually going up a little bit. At best, it's flat, and it's flat at a very high level. And so some of the areas might be declining slightly, but not that dramatically. And so there's a lot of people out there that are infected with the virus. It's not like it's got to build up and get to some critical mass before it starts taking off again. It's very close to that critical mass right now. And there are these flare-ups, and a lot of these flare-ups are associated with processing plants, and they're not only beef processing and pork processing, they're also poultry processing, and they're not just limited to the Midwest, where most of the beef and pork are. They're also in the Southeast and states like Georgia, where there's poultry processing plants and outbreaks at different locations. And so the concern is that lifting the lockdown is going to make some people think, well, it's over. And they can kind of go back to prior lockdown conditions, which it really isn't. But some people will kind of behave that way. And then there are examples of that where, there was one church service that, basically, kind of acknowledged that there was still a problem, but went ahead and had an in-person service. And they were doing thermometer checks, at the door, which, 70% of those with COVID don't have a fever. So that really wasn't going to catch everybody. And then they were offering masks, but nobody was wearing them. They kind of peer pressure, or they wanted, part of the service they were singing, so they didn't want the masks. So there were no masks on faces. there were masks there, but nobody was wearing them. And that's an example where there were some other restaurants that had opened up, and they were crowded, and people were standing in line to get in, and it was crowded inside. And so they were kind of ignoring any kind of social distancing. And that's what's likely to happen. And that's what the big concern is that, if people just start ignoring the social distancing, then, these pockets are locally very, very dense. I mean, some of these locations are, there's a document out there that shows some of the areas to watch, and some of them have like a 600% rise in the last, it's either 1 or 2 weeks. And others are, 200 to 400% rises. So they're significant increases, and some of them are a little bit larger than others. So 200-300% is quite a few cases. It can be hundreds, if not thousands, of cases in a relatively small region. And so the concern is that those are going to just kind of take off if the virus gets an opportunity. And it's going to go beyond just the processing plants, for instance, and it's going to spread to the local community. And some of the processing plants, you know, there's been anecdotal reports of just bad management. I mean, these plants are concerned because there's a bunch of workers that are sick or calling in sick. I don't know if they even believe they're sick because initially they weren't testing them. Uh-huh. And then they would offer a bonus, attendance bonus, that if you don't miss any days for the entire month, they'll give you an extra $500. And so that would encourage people that were sick to basically, ignore their illness or
that's
cover
right.
their fever.
Come right back.
They gave an example of one worker that took Tylenol because she wanted the $500 bonus, and she ended up getting a severe case and ended up dying. And
really? That's an interesting story.
And so the undoubtedly infected other people in the plant. And so it's a little bit like the Diamond Princess. They come up with this scheme on how they're going to control the outbreak, and they just end up spreading it. And the same thing, offering a $500 bonus for people to show up at work when they're infected, essentially, is who they're encouraging. I mean, people that aren't infected, we're probably going to show up at work anyway. The only ones that are going to be showing up to get the 500 that shouldn't be showing up are ones that are infected.
Wow.
And
the woman died. That's interesting. I didn't hear that story.
Yeah.
Tyson is now linked to nearly 5,000 coronavirus cases at its plants. And for those of you who are pork eaters, you probably noticed that pork production is down and you're not seeing your usual selection at your fast food place or at your market. Pork production is formally down now 40%. But get this one, Henry.
Yeah. Pork exports are up.
Pork exports to China are up 400% as of today.
Yeah,
pork production down 40%, but exports to China up 400%. Pork goes to the highest bidder. That's it.
Yeah. And a lot of these have to do with just having two different types of customers. And it comes down to who the customers are and how the product is packaged. And so some of there's the retail customers who are, your supermarket, where there's shortages, and then there's other customers like restaurants or schools that are closed, and therefore they're not in the market anymore. So that export to China might fit that category. These were pork products that would normally go to schools or restaurants.
Oh, could be. They got to sell them to somebody.
Cruise ships or whatever. And since those are closed and they're not ordering any product, they sell it in bulk. And so it's not the type of packaging or distribution system that would that would work for your local, retail supermarket. They're the type that are going to sell, truckloads or, boatloads in this case of product to whoever. And whoever in this case, it sounds like it might be China. And so they've got a buyer in China and they send it there. I mean, it's the same way that why a lot of these products are just getting dumped when, you know, food banks are running out of food because their lines are so long, the demand's so high for their product, and they just can't, they can't keep it stocked because there's too much of a demand. So, so there's a distribution demand. And that kind of highlights what the problem is. There's no real plan here. It's just, you know, well, you got to keep the plants open. And so they keep the plants open by, you know, offering bonuses to people that are sick to come to work and infect more people. And so it's not a good long-term solution. It's a short-term, we got more people coming to work today than we did yesterday. But
the
unfortunately,
ship has no weather.
They're coming today because they're sick. And, you know, if they come, they can get a bonus. So they decided they'll come anyway. And so, there's no real program there for just repositioning the food. So the food that would normally go to restaurants and schools would get repackaged so that it would end up going to supermarkets or food banks and would alleviate some of these shortages and
prices. I have a solution. Let's put Jerry Kushner in charge of all this. He'll clean it right up. Come on.
Well, actually, he needs a job because he's coming off the procurement job. What was it? Air something or other with this project for, and that's being disbanded. So he's done with taking FEMA supplies. And
well, he's still in charge of the border crisis, and I think he's still in charge of the Middle East peace process. And he was in charge of negotiations with China. His portfolio is fat. He's all right.
No, I know, but the one with FEMA is,
I'm being
is
facetious.
Being disbanded.
Of course.
So he does have an opening. So. So the problem really with the pandemic is that there's a rush, of course, to get back to work, but it's not clear how effective that's going to be as long as there's a lot of virus around and a shortage of kits. I mean, there's still a testing concern. And, you know, one of the things that came up on this conference this afternoon had to do with, one of the arguments is, the U.S. testing is much improved now, and per capita, that's per capita testing now is greater than it had been in South Korea. And the problem with that argument is South Korea was doing this high-level testing back several months ago. And at that point, the object of that testing was to do tracking of the cases and get them quarantined. And so they did a lot of testing to find out who all the contacts were so that they could get the contacts quarantined and stop the spread. And that was very successful. They only ended up with something like, I think, 278 deaths total for the whole country. And and because it was successful, number of tests they had to run was relative to the U.S. was really fairly small because they were doing it early and they kind of knew who the index case was and who the contacts were, and it actually was a church group. So basically they knew who the likely infected contacts are, who would be infected, and it was just a matter of identifying them and testing them, and then the positives get quarantined, and then the contacts of the positives get tested. And so they were comparing that number, which was done months ago when the U.S. was doing virtually no testing because all they had were defective tests from the CDC being done by the CDC because they recalled all the tests. So there was very little testing going on in the U.S. at that time. And as a result,
very
there wasn't
little.
Contact tracing. Right. So there wasn't contact tracing. The virus spread. There was no testing of those coming from Europe. They were only testing people that had a travel history to China. So everything that was coming in on the East Coast was just all silently coming in. There was no testing of anybody from Europe in February when the cases were coming in from right. Europe. And it was real obvious that people, countries all over the world were reporting their first case was somebody who had traveled to northern Italy and come back and was positive and had infected other people in whatever destination they were going to. And these countries were all over the world except for the U.S. And it wasn't because people didn't fly from Italy to the U.S. or it wasn't because people didn't fly from the U.S. to Italy getting infected and not come home. They came home, but when they came home and they had symptoms, they said, I think I got COVID. And they said, have you been out of the country? And they said, yeah, we've been in Italy. And they said, oh, we're only testing those from China. So they never got tested and they never got followed. And they uh-huh. basically expanded the virus. So the point is that the U.S. is now doing new cases every day, and they've got 80,000 people who have died. So they've got mm-hmm. you know close to 2,000 people dying every day. So that now the testing is higher, but the number of people that are infected is much higher. It's no longer at an initial stage mm-hmm. where you can control it with contact tracing. Now it's at a mitigation stage where you're
no,
just
you
kind
can't.
Of
contact tracing doesn't
to see
it's,
what's
it's,
out there, right?
It's too late.
You're
too
not
late.
Doing that. There's way too many people. All you're doing is seeing how bad is it while you do the mitigation and try to get those numbers to bend lower, you know, to flatten the curve and to keep them in a manageable position, but you're not really making them go away. And that's the goal of the mitigation. The goal of the mitigation isn't really to make the virus disappear. It's really to flatten the curve and keep the rate down to a manageable level so you don't overwhelm the healthcare delivery system. And that has a tendency to kind of, keep the virus around at a lower level than it would have gone to without the mitigation, but not necessarily make the virus go away. And so in this case, there's so much virus that there certainly hasn't been a dramatic drop in the virus. April came and went, and as you said, it's
no,
almost
there's no, no seasonal aberration here to really point at
right,
yet. Nothing,
right. And it's still kind of leveled off at this high level. A few places it might have dipped right. a little bit. The mitigation seems to have worked relatively well in New York, and New Jersey seems to be following suit. And it did have kind of a sharp rise and then a decline down in Louisiana and the New Orleans area. So that one went up fairly quickly and then came down fairly quickly. So that one's on a decline. And the Northeast is on a decline, but there's still lots of cases in Michigan and in Illinois. Illinois had like something like 4,000 new cases today. So I don't know if they got a batch back from Quest or what it was, but they had a huge mm-hmm. jump in cases today. And so that's kind of where we are. We're at a level where it hasn't gone away, is hanging around, and there's loosening of the lockdown, and it's fairly widespread. It's in some states that really don't show much of a decline at all. In fact, they're showing rises. And then the spot reports are indicating that they've got certain areas that have a fairly dramatic rise. And without any type of controls or social distancing or even partial controls, you're going to get more people on the road, more people going to given locations. There will be an effort to kind of, keep things somewhat under control. But, if you have a lot of people that are showing up and are walking on the sidewalks, uh-huh. as opposed to staying in their houses, then you're going to have more people, bumping into each other, at least being within 6 feet
of
each other.
Have you spent much time, Henry, studying, evaluating what's gone on in Sweden with their different, totally different approach, no lockdowns, no mandatory masks,
right.
Minimal social distancing, and everything open
right.
and doing well?
They're not doing all that well. I mean, they have a higher rate than their neighbors, and the numbers are definitely higher.
Their businesses were doing well. Yeah.
But there is a difference between Sweden and the neighboring countries as far as what the incidence is concerned.
Well, they say in Sweden,
and so, just
one quickie, they say in Sweden that they have such an enormous senior extended care facility system, and these are big, big units, and most of their fatalities have been involving those units with older people. That's what they say.
Yeah. How it is in the U.S. too. I know that in the Northeast, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York, all of them have at least 50% of their fatalities are
from extended care,
senior and extended care mm-hmm. facilities, mm-hmm. and other states aren't quite as high, but that is happening here also. So that's where a good chunk of the cases come from. And then, the other cases that aren't are typically in these, have underlying conditions. Although now it sounds like, now there's concern about the children. And that came up at, today's conference. That is concerning, and the main reason it's concerning is that result, which seems to be kind of like anaphylactic shock type thing, it's a overstimulated
TSS.
Immune system.
Yeah.
And the reason that's concerning is because that seems to be happening as a result of the infection. And so these children are developing these rashes significantly after they were infected. So in some cases they test them and they're negative for the virus, but they're positive for the antibodies. And that whole syndrome sounds a lot like the polio-like illness that has been coming like every other year. I'm not sure exactly why, but for every other year, it's been popping up in the U.S. And these are this D68 is the strain that seems to be most associated with it, and the virus is circulating usually in the summer, so mm-hmm. that they're coming down with a viral disease in August, September, And then they're coming down with the myelitis, like 4 to 6 weeks later. And so there was some, you know, I don't understand. I mean, polio worked the same way. So it wasn't a major mystery, but, you know, they would say, well, I don't know exactly what's causing it because, you know, I tested for the virus and they're negative. But that's because it's really after the fact. And, mm-hmm. and that's, mm-hmm. polio will do the same thing. And so this virus seems to be doing the same thing with the children. So as far as getting a burst of cases, they may be, the cases that have been reported in New York alone, I think they're close to 100 cases now. And there are at least 3, if not 5 deaths. There's 3 deaths that have been confirmed and 2 more uh-huh. deaths that are under investigation.
Are they sequencing the virus that these children have? What are they finding, if they are? Do you know?
Well, that's why I say they know the area. They're in New York, and almost sure. all of the viruses from Italian. New York are the Italian strain. And the illness is coming up after the virus is gone. So many of these cases test negative for the virus. They're only positive for the antibodies to the virus. And so when they had the virus, which you would be able to isolate and sequence, the child wasn't diagnosed. The child, you know, in many cases, they did not have respiratory problems. And, you know, most of the cases in children have been milder. That's why, you know, some people are saying no children have died from it, even though a few have. But the fatality rate is much lower for the children. And and usually they don't get that sick. And that's why some people were saying, well, you know, maybe you should, you know, let the schools open up, because they really don't get that sick from the virus, and the fatality rate is not that high. But right. as it turns out, they develop the heart issues and the rashes after the virus is gone. And so uh-huh. they don't really have a virus to sequence and get the sequence. They just know that in the case when they had the antibodies, they know they were infected with this strain, and they know that the strain that's circulating is predominantly the Italian strain. Because, you know, most of the cases they got are in New York, but it's not limited to New York. I think there were 5 in Philadelphia. And there were other ones around the country, but at much lower levels than New York. And that would correlate somewhat with this Italian strain, that the Italian strain was, you know, well over 90% of the cases mm-hmm. in the New York area. And this seems to be not so much related to what the sequence of the virus is. It's likely to be more related to the immune response to the virus. And so the requirement is really probably that they had a relatively high viral load and got a strong immune response, but the immune response was strong enough that it basically kept them from getting that sick. So they didn't necessarily come in while they and see a doctor when they were mm-hmm. infected with the virus. They only came in weeks afterwards, after they had pretty much cleared the virus. But right. the immune system that had been cranked up and was battling the virus continued to cause damage, like to heart tissues, and then they would end up with some of the symptoms that they had, in addition to the rash, which is more of a systemic type thing. They had specific organ damage to their heart, and that was probably due to the fact that the virus had been there and the antibodies had attacked the heart tissues when they were trying to.
How much are you hearing about heart damage now? I haven't seen anything in the news for several weeks about these heart issues and the increase in heart attacks in New York, but nothing. Nothing. Are you seeing anything? I'm not.
Well, number one, the children involve the heart, and they're in New York. The heart attacks are probably calming down. I mean, New York is definitely on the downward slope. So, you know, if you don't have this big spike, I mean, the reason they saw the heart attack is because the spike in cases correlated with a spike in heart attacks. And right. So those two went together. If the level of viral cases is capped down, so it's a little bit, you know, instead of, I mean, there were something like 3,000 cases being admitted per day at the peak. And now it's down, I think it's below 500, it's 500, 400 or something. So once you get down to 400 or 500 a day coming in for the whole state, you know, it's spread out, and the number of heart attacks would be, you know, if you normally had 20 or 30, maybe you'll have 30 or 40. So it'll actually even potentially overlap. So if you have 30, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like a bad normal day, but it's kind of a good COVID day, and it gives you the same number. So the heart conditions kind of get identified because there's a lot of people coming in, especially the ones that were being called for heart attacks. So that they knew that they were getting this big rise in heart attacks. Instead of getting 20 or 30 calls in a day, they were getting, you know, 100 or 200. I think they got as high as 180 or 200 calls a day.
When
the paramedics are getting 200 calls instead of 20 calls, they know something's going on, and they know that the only thing that's really going on is they've got all these COVID cases that are showing up at the emergency room. And so now, with the numbers down, if they've got 30 heart attacks, they just figure, well, it's a busy day for heart attacks. It's not because, you know, 10 of those are COVID cases, and so they're not really raising a red flag, and they're not really being investigated. And it's not really new news anymore. It was news when it was happening because, you know, the paramedics were getting all these calls for heart attacks. So they knew that COVID was causing heart attacks because their heart attack calls were so high. And so that made news because they said, well, there's something going on here. It's not just the people that are coming in with breathing difficulties. We've got this huge spike in heart attack calls, and so the virus must be causing heart attacks also. So as far as hearing about it, you hear things that are news. I mean, you're not hearing that much about the new cases now. What you're hearing more about is cases are and the emergency rooms are more under control now. And I mean, they were saying it was like a war room when they, you know, a month or two ago, that they were just getting one case coming in after the other. All the rooms were full.
And allegedly that ER doctor, the director of the ER in that hospital, killed herself because of the stress. I still find that to be very odd. It just didn't make sense to me. She wasn't indicating any signs of being depressed like that, from what I read.
I mean, she had gotten infected, so she couldn't really work. I mean, that's what she was supposed to be concerned about, is that, you know, once she was infected, she couldn't really get back to work and work, or she would get, you know, fatigued real easily. And so she couldn't really do what she was doing before, and that was the depression, I think.
I checked I checked out Nyman. There hasn't been a new listing under Google on Nyman in over a day. Not Nyman. Gosh darn it. Pence, Henry. I've looked for Pence stories. Nothing.
He's being quiet. I don't think he is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, I know he's being quiet. And that whole story of him, well, he's going to work from home, and then they knew that would look really bad.
Right.
So he's got to come to work, and now he's probably working from home. And they're just not talking about it anymore.
Of course.
I don't know what his schedule is. And
there's something going on there. And we're going. If Trump coughs one time in public, watch. Look out.
But I think Pence is who's. I think that Pence and Miller are the two plus a whole lot of other aides. I have a feeling because, I mean, if she was symptomatic and the reporter said she was, and the reporter that in the pictures, he's right in front of her, and so if she said she was coughing Thursday morning and she wasn't positive until Friday morning, and she was at the nursing home and I don't know where else, but she had plenty of contact with plenty of staff, and she wasn't wearing a mask. So we'll see, but I'll put my money on Pence.
that sounds like a good bet. Okay, Henry, thank you. Yeah. Talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay, take care. Talk to you.
Good.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone, thank you for being here. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll do it again.